Business is simple. It's just not easy. We focus on three things to help you run and grow your business more easily: talent, sales, and how to scale. This is the Talent, Sales, and Scale Show. Hey everyone, Brian Whittington with this episode of the Talent, Sales, and Scale Show. We have James, say what, Sales Buckley on with us, and we're going to be talking about how in the world do we have an ongoing, continuous training, leveraging all different resources from one-off to ongoing, but bottom line, it's use the right tools and tactics for what we're ultimately trying to do, and that is continuous improvement. So with that said, welcome, James.
Hey, thanks very much. I appreciate it. This is a good show. Last time we did this, we had a good time.
Yeah. So James is such a good guy. We pulled this up, and be very careful whenever you do a record to cloud on your Zoom, make sure the buttons are right because bad stuff happens if not, unless if you have a really good guy like James. So James, I really appreciate your patience and you coming
back. My pleasure, my friend. It's my pleasure.
Yeah. So let's hit this. I mean, so you started off in doing content on your own, making videos and really created a huge following and gone into this. So I guess with that said, from your evolution, talk to us. I mean, why in the world should we listen to you about being an expert on continuous improvement, and why should we listen to you about training?
Yeah. So I started as an SDR in 2015. Prior to that, I was in the kitchen. I worked 15 years in the kitchen, but in and out of that 15 years, I did door-to-door residential and door-to-door B2B. So that's where I cut my teeth in sales. And then when I moved to SaaS and technology sales, it was 2015. And I started as an SDR, worked my way 4 years. I worked my way up to account executive and then business development manager. And then from there, I moved in 2019 to a company called Ringlead, recently acquired by ZoomInfo. I learned all about data orchestration and what it was to actually use data in the effective manner that it needs to be used in business today. Great education. Ken Green and the rest of the family over there at Ringlead really taught me a lot. In that time at Ringlead, I was basically their evangelist, the face of that organization for that year. And my content game really took a step forward. So prior to joining Ringlead, for the first 4 years, I basically held my phone in front of my face and created content on social media platforms about what I was doing. Hey guys, what's going on? I tried this today and I scheduled 6 meetings. Or, hey guys, I tried this today and the door got slammed in my face every single time. So don't do this. Right? It turned out this was like wildly helpful for a lot of salespeople. So I figured after about a year, I should probably give this a name. And Say What Sales was what was born, because I was born in the 80s and Say What was like super popular. And then one of the things that I was constantly being asked after I started creating this content was, James, what do I say when someone says this? What do I say when someone says that? So Say What was like second nature. And then of course the alliteration, Say What Sales, it just stuck with me. And that was what it was. After a while, I started to think, okay, I'm selling essentially to salespeople all the time. I might as well say something that attracts salespeople to me. And I had a friend, Kenneth Herring, who used to be Mr. I Love Mondays, but that wasn't nearly as popular as his later I Hate Mondays. I Love Fridays, and then it was I Hate Mondays, and I Hate Mondays was way better. So Mr. I Hate Mondays used to say hashtag Mr. I Hate Mondays, we'll see you next Monday or something like that. But it was the same thing he said. So I said, what can I say to wrap up all my stuff? And I came up with, if you're a salesperson, we're the same person. And because I sell to salespeople, that stuck, and people came from out of the woodwork. And now it's become such a thing. People say it to me randomly. Like people on the street are like, we're the same person. Like, it's really weird, but it's a lot of fun. And I'll tell you, building a brand was the best thing that I could have done for my sales career. And the reason you should listen to me is because I work with JB Sales, one of the most prominent and world-renowned sales training organizations in software today. And I'm very proud to represent that team. And our job is to elevate the sales profession to the place where it needs to be and have this stigma of the sleazy salesperson removed from our society today.
Well, and so I have a little bit of a sneak peek from the last time that we did this, and I know where you're heading. So let's talk about that sales professionalism, right? Because you came up from a cook, for goodness sakes, in a restaurant, and then you went door to door. And a lot of people would say, you know what, James, appreciate it. I'm never going to hire you as an SDR because you don't know how to prospect. You're a cook. You only know how to door knock. You can't pick up the phone. So how, I guess, Let's talk about continuous improvement, that continuous learning, growth into this professionalism. How did you do that from the get-go to get your foot in the door?
Yeah, you know, I didn't. I think I was very fortunate to have great leadership at the time. So I was working with a guy named Zach Metters. He was my immediate supervisor. He's a full stack developer now, but at the time he was business development manager. And Zach had this great way of forcing us to think for ourselves as BDRs. So one of the things that was very prominent for him was when he brought you on for 30 days, you could ask him anything you want and he would always answer you. But after that, he would say, oh, let me Google that for you. And you would feel really dumb. And that only had to happen a couple times before you never did anything without going to Google something first. And usually you'd find the answer most times. But if you did ask him a good question, he was always the first person to be like, that's a good question. Let's talk about it. Right. So like I had this great leadership in place, and then him and I became friends and we started traveling together. I've been around the globe twice with Zach at Salesforce events and different Salesforce world tours that we did all over the globe. And what a blast to learn in that way. At the same time, I'm 40 years old. I gravitate towards the phone. If there is a phone number to be dialed, I will default there first. Our other supervisor, Aaron, who later would become our sales director, he was in the room next to me listening to my calls. And I remember at the time we were using Google Hangouts because Slack wasn't a thing yet. And Google Hangouts, I got this message from Aaron. It was like one of the first messages I ever got from Aaron Riley. And he's now at ThankView as a CRO. And he said, man, I'm hearing you and you sound amazing. You're going to be great at this. And this was like my second day.
Yeah.
So I was like, all right, like this is a good experience. Fast forward a couple of weeks, I started to get mentored by one of my very good friends now, Jason Hubbard, who is fantastic marketing lead at Astronomer, and Brandon Bruce. Brandon Bruce, the former co-founder of Cirrus Insight, took me under his wing. I use the word wing because he's like 7'6". He's bananas tall. Like we called him the condor. So these guys like all kind of took me under their wing and was like, man, your personality is so big and so boisterous. We have to be able to channel this into something incredible. And they really encouraged me to be myself and be authentic and just be out there because it drove so much new conversation. And that's really where I started to feel like, okay, this is really going to work. I can build a well-known brand for myself and I won't have to chase business anymore. It'll chase me if I let it.
Now, did you start with the intention of building out your own brand, or did you just fall into it? How did you come about?
It wasn't my intention for it to become this when I first started it, but it caught the attention of John and Morgan and Chris Merrill here at JB Sales. I got to meet their team. We stayed in contact for a couple of years. I was very supportive of what they were doing to elevate the sales profession. Yeah. And because of that, I got the call at the end of 2019 while I was still with Ringlead, and John just straight up said, man, the way you make people feel is incredible. You want to do it with me? And I said, tell me where to sign up, man. Let's do it. Right. And that's like, normally I would have said, give me some time. Let me talk to my wife. I'll get back to you. But I had been exposed to John and on their trail for so long that it seemed very organic. And I was so excited to be invited onto this team that I held in such high regard. Come to find out, like, these guys are like the most humble people in the world. When I first came on, I remember we were in Las Vegas shooting all this content, and I told John, like, I'm straight up starstruck. And he was like, look, man, you're gonna have to get over that. I'm a human being just like you. I'm a person just like you. And I don't like being held up to this pedestal. And I'll tell you, it took me a few months to realize that he's right about that. And we hold people up on these pedestals and we're just as great as them. We have just as much potential. We only have to unlock it and figure out how to harness it and use it to our advantage for growth and development. And that's where the continuous learning tends to come in.
Okay, so a couple of things for continuous learning here. One, storytelling. If you notice how many names James has dropped here, we got Zach, we got Aaron, we got Jason, we got Brandon, and the 3-4 others that we missed earlier, right? So bringing in others into the story to capture and engage. And the other thing too, you said how you make people feel. Now, you said a little bit earlier, and we talked about this the last time, that will never be heard because it wasn't recorded, thanks Zoom. But we heard from last time, actually, no, it was my fault. I didn't press the right button.
I was going to say, let's not blame the technology.
Let's blame where it is. Extreme accountability, that was my fault. So shoot, all right. So anyway, you mentioned that you're bigger than life, that personality. So that's natural. What do you do with people that are maybe a little bit more introverted or don't have that, or worse, they don't have the confidence to lay themselves out there? What would you say to that person, James?
Yeah, you know, I would say that you have an ideal buyer as well. You know, people have this misunderstanding of what introvert and extrovert is. So I'll give you a couple of definitions that are fun. And these are my definitions of introverts and extroverts, especially when you put it through the sales lens. I think extroverts are outgoing and outspoken in all the traditional ways, but we have to speak to form thought. Extroverts have this need to hear themselves speak it out loud if it is going to be meaningful, if it's something that's coming from their mind in sales. Introverts think of all the possible outcomes. They dissect every little thing and then make an informed decision. Extroverts throw stuff against the wall. And we're like, yeah, like I'm just going to keep at it. My persistence, my jive, my energy is going to pull this thing over the finish line. Both are acceptable if they work. Pragmatism is the religion of sales, right? For every person that's an extrovert that gravitates towards selling to someone else that's energetic and outgoing, there's another buyer on the other side of that fence, on the other side of that spectrum, that's not so impressed by all that loud energy and wants someone calm and a little more subtle and not so boisterous. And those people have ideal sellers, people that they gravitate towards. I always ask this question. I say, have you ever met somebody that when you meet them, you're like, oh my God, I love this person. And you don't know why. There's just something about them, rubs you the right way. You feel good when you're around them. You're like, I can't wait to spend time with them. And at the same time, we've all met people before. When we shake their hand, we're like, if I ever see that piece of shit again, it's going to be way too soon. Our job as salespeople is to recognize which one is which, because I can sell to the former so much more easily than I can sell to the latter.
Yeah. Now, the other, the other piece of this too is your energy level. See, here's the curious thing, right? It doesn't matter how you feel, you have to do it anyway. In my senses, I know you're a little bit of a wallflower, James, and I know that you're going to hold your...
Yeah, I'm super quiet, right?
So here's the question then. The hypothesis that I have is that I don't care if you're an introvert or extrovert. It's on you, the sales professional, to create that proper level of energy, and you own the other's mood, if you will, because you have to be the energy that if they're down, to pull them up, to have that likability, because otherwise it goes nowhere. That's my sense. You can tell me I'm all wrong.
No, not at all. I think there's a level of adaptability that takes place. If I'm calling somebody in California, my speech tends to change and I talk a little lower. It's a little bit slower. I take my time. There's really no hurry if I'm talking to somebody in California, because that's the way they like to be spoken to in the far West. But if I'm talking to someone in New York, they're usually real quick and to the point. I need to wrap this up. Listen, the reason I'm calling you is that I've got this thing. People tell me they struggle with this. They use that to get this. Let's have a conversation. Are you free yet? You want to do it now? Are you in front of your calendar? I'm not saying you should change your voice or who you are. I'm saying mirror your delivery to match the person in the region that they live based on what you know. There's something to be said for the fact that when somebody feels like they're connected to you or that you have a familiarity about you, they're more comfortable. They're less guarded. And salespeople struggle to get that guard down consistently throughout the day. There's way more no than there is yes. And usually it's because that guard is up by default. When we have a familiarity, that guard tends to come down much more easily than when we don't have it.
So I'm marking down a note here, and based upon what you just said, it's kind of curious. Most salespeople, you know, we love the tactics. Hey, how do you do this? What sure. do you say here?
Right? I got lots of those.
Yeah, we love the tactics. But I think what you're really pointing out here, and this really goes to that continuous learning, is it's the interpersonal skills of knowing how to engage, how to listen radically, how to mirror, how to match, how to use the Chris Voss label or whatever you want to call it. It's all out there. There's nothing new under the sun. So it seems like that's what you're talking about. And again, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but that seems to be what you're talking about whenever you're talking about continuous learning. Whereas maybe that one-off is that tactical, here's how you do it. But you need that continuous learning to realize that whenever you're talking with a James, you use this tactic a little bit differently using this interpersonal skill than you will with a Brian or with a George or with an Aaron. Is that kind of a okay summary there?
In this particular example, I would say that what I'm talking about is knowing your audience.
Yeah.
If you're talking about continuous learning, I think what I'm referring to in that sense is how are you consistently developing new skills, new tactics, new techniques that are yielding new results? That is continuous learning. If that's a focus for you, you're likely somebody that's sitting on top of that leaderboard, because you're always A/B testing, because your ideas for new types of approaches are constantly being pulled out of your tool belt. The best salespeople are like Batman. They always have a tool for the job. There's always some other approach that they can whip out of that bat belt and try. And those are the people that realize, man, there's no silver bullets in this game. I work for a very impressive and world-renowned sales company, but we're not the silver bullet, man. There are none in this game. You should be learning from John, Morgan, myself, Christina Finseth, anybody in Rev Genius, right? Like there's 1,000 different resources out there. You can take ideas from all of them and make them your own and A/B test them and find the things that work for your target audience. Because what works for one person doesn't necessarily work for the other. You can have a technique that you employ all day on the 9th and it works 3 times. And on the 10th, you use it again and it works not at all. And it's the same exact technique, but you'll never know how that one individual person is going to react to it until you use it enough times and realize how it works to your advantage or to your detriment.
So how often do you stick with something if it worked? How often do you stick with it versus that whipsaw? Because that A/B test can be, A, B, C, D, T, Z.
Yep. It's a great question. And my opinion is that you should, and people use this phrase a lot, fail fast.
Yeah.
Right. Use something 3 times, 4 times, 5 times. Get a consistent fail before you just decide it doesn't work.
Right? But again, how do you know it's not the day, not your mood, not your whatever?
That's why you do it on multiple times with multiple on multiple occasions. That's why you have a data set that you're working with each time so that you know and make sure that data set is large enough. Like if you're testing new messaging out and you're using it for a new prospecting technique that you want to try, you can't send it to someone that doesn't fall into your ICP, you can't send it to a list of personas that you don't typically sell to and then be like, oh, that messaging doesn't work. Yeah. No, you formatted that messaging for your ideal persona and then sent it to this other persona. You can't say it doesn't work.
So I can't believe I'm going to ask you this question, but here it comes. Do you journal? Do you track this stuff, or are you just keeping it all up in your head?
A lot of it's in my brain, but I do write a lot. I do create a lot of video content. Like I have a habit of turning my camera and my video and my voice recorder on in my car. And I don't pay attention to it. I'm just driving, but I'm talking out loud and I'm sharing these ideas that I have. Then I finish the drive and I shut it down, but I come back later and I listen to it while I'm working out. I listen to it on a run. I listen to it while I'm walking. I listen to it while I run laps and play basketball, right? There's like a lot of things that I do to go back and listen to those ideas and pull out the nuggets that I think are amazing. Don't get me wrong. A lot of it, 90% of it's babble, right? I'm just bullshitting. But sometimes there's a gem in there and I'm like, oh, that was good. And I'll go and I'll write that down and then I'll create an A/B test for it. And I'll see if I can dig something out. And that's been really wildly helpful for me. I've been doing that for the last couple of years. I have a lot of long drives, so.
Well, it's a great idea. So no matter whether you're journal, whether you're putting it in an audio or however you're doing it, capture those and then don't just do it, but then go back and listen to it. And I think that's where a lot of people screw up, right? They'll make
This is a great, way to also get more comfortable with yourself, right? We talked earlier and you said, hey, what about people that aren't that extroverted? What about people that aren't that outgoing, people that don't want to be on screen or don't like their voice heard? If that's a struggle for you, this is a great way to get comfortable with yourself. This and one other tip I'll give you is when I first started, I spent a lot of time looking in the mirror and looking at my nonverbal communication. How's my facial expression? Am I smiling a lot? Can they hear me smile over the phone? If they can, that's great because that's going to work to my advantage. They're going to say, man, this is a really upbeat call. A lot of times I would end a call and they'd be like, this was really refreshing. If you're getting that, you're doing a great fucking job on the cold calls, right? Yeah.
No, and the other thing that came to me, because I remember the last time that we spoke, you were a little bit later in life that you really got into this, that you were going through school, you had kids and all that good stuff,
yeah.
if I'm not mistaken already. So my sense is you weren't always this curious. Am I off on that?
You know, as a cook, I think I had it in my head. So I was a drug addict for a long time. I have a whole story out there about this, and I overcame a lot of cocaine use to get where I'm at. I went back to college, got a degree, started a career, got a divorce all in the same year.
Wow.
And it was just a really big undertaking. But in the end, I came out on the other side clean, and I came out with a much better future in front of me and a better provider for my family, which turned out to be the best possible decision I could have made, was moving away from Miami, where I lived at the time, moving to the Great Smoky Mountains of East Tennessee now. And now I'm undertaking this health journey and, you know, getting my fitness back together at 40 years old. And that was a big health scare last year where I was diagnosed with type 2 diabetes. I'm a human being, but you'll notice all these trends that they're hearing in this conversation, right? Like, my vulnerability is my strength.
Yeah.
And the people that gravitate towards human beings buy from other human beings. This is the magnet that salespeople must be in 2022. Continuous learning will give you all the skills that you need to be able to execute on your personal brand being a money generator for your life.
Now, it's kind of curious, right? So if we look at your background and see what you went through, You were going after something, and so now going on this health journey, you're still going after something. So have you noticed your goals have changed and your focus has changed, or how's that come about?
Yeah, my time management has definitely gotten better. I think for my first 6 years in sales, especially in the SaaS and tech space, I was very heavily weighted towards the generating revenue side. So I was very focused 24 hours a day. I was like thinking about work, doing work. I remember a few times my wife saying, "God, all you talk about is your job," you know, and you're like, "Oh, it's because you're excited about it. And because you're finally passionate about it." Right. And that's a good thing. You want that. But if it's taking over your life, you're not spending enough time doing things that are for you in your life. So now I'm on this path of like, how do I balance the time? Well, I used to get up at 5 a.m. and I would come down and I would immediately go to work. I'd take my quick shower, I'd get ready, and I'd come and I'd start talking to people in Europe because they're 5 hours ahead, right? So I'm talking to them and we're getting business done in Europe. And that's amazing, like great business decision to get up at 5 and do international business because no one else in America is awake to distract me, right? Yeah, so, right. So that was a good decision. Now I've turned that towards my physical fitness and my health and my wellness. And I've used that morning time to get in shape. And I put a post out about my health update this morning with all the data. But it was a big shift from what I was spending my time on to spend that time making myself a better vessel for the value I like to deliver to the sales community.
Nice. Yeah. And with your level of energy, you got to keep yourself in shape. So,
well, I can't die at 55, right? That's what I keep telling myself. But let's talk about the continuous learning part. Cause I really want to say that I'm a champion of training. There was a misnomer. There's a misnomer out there that you have to choose one over the other. And I'd like to debunk that, if I may, for anyone out there that's listening. There's a place for training. Training is extremely important, but training is an event. It's an event that stops eventually. Continuous learning is something that is adopted by a team, and they are all investing in themselves and taking it unto themselves to better themselves, grow themselves, develop themselves. And usually all this takes is an enablement from leadership to be able to say, go do this, learn this, be better. That's all they're waiting for. That's continuous learning versus training. Training is amazing. It can change perspectives. It can give technique and strategy and tactics, and it can really be implemented and you can see great results. But continuous learning will better the person behind those results as well.
Yeah, and well, you were making that same pivot. I was about to go there. And what I wanted to say is your continuous learning isn't just in sales. You're continuous learning the whole person. And I think that's the other key piece is you're not, well, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but what else in addition to sales are you studying and getting to know for your continuous growth and development?
Yeah, so first of all, the wellness journey has improved my productivity. It's improved my level of focus. It's even improved my results because I'm able to focus better now on the true goal. It's easy to get distracted, right? And when you have a lot of pent up energy, like I do, you might be able to tell I'm quite energetic. Sometimes you can get distracted in the worst of ways. LinkedIn can be the greatest thing for your pipeline. It can also be a black hole that sucks you in and wastes your time. The same thing can be said about any social media platform. It can be the best generator that you've ever had for lead gen. But if it takes all your time and you don't have the time to talk to those people and sell to them because you're constantly on social, you're using that thing wrong, man. Right?
Well, and so you seem to jump in and have a personality that's go big or go home. So do you find that you're having to put boundaries not only on the social media, but on the learning and everything that you're doing?
You know, believe it or not, I don't spend as much time as people think I do on social media. I will say I spend quite a bit of time on LinkedIn, but that's because LinkedIn is a place where business happens.
Right.
And I tend to gravitate towards LinkedIn because a lot of people know that I'm very responsive there. But when it comes to Instagram and Facebook and Twitter, I'm kind of in and out of those throughout the day for a few seconds at a time, just to see, like, is there a DM in there that's from a prospect that I can reach out to and get a meeting scheduled next week? Where are they ready to move forward? People know they can reach out to me on social platforms and they know I'm responsive there. We at JB Sales in general are very responsive on social media platforms. So they know they can come to us. Our network of 1.something million people knows that they... Just a few, right? They can come to us and they can talk to us about that stuff. So we are responsive there, but you do have to cut it off. And sometimes I find myself, and it's probably a lot of people that are going to feel me on this, but sometimes I find myself with the phantom pocket where, like, you feel your phone ring in your pocket and you go to, like, make sure that it's not vibrating and you realize it's not there and you look across the room and it's on the charger, like, over there. You know what I'm saying? Like, I find myself in that situation because I'm addicted to what is happening in my life on a career level because of the brand I've built. That's my addiction. I replaced the addiction I had with hard drugs with this success, with this thing that drives me to be a better man every day. That's my addiction.
Yeah. And that's where kind of where I was trying to go earlier. So thank you for bringing that back around. And then you didn't really answer that question. Have you had to put any boundaries?
No, I don't spend enough time on the platforms other than LinkedIn to really need to put the boundaries. When I'm ready to cut it off, I cut it off. That message will be there tomorrow.
Now, how about the application then? Because if you're constantly taking in this learning, how are you making application? Because that's the other big thing that I see that people screw up on.
So I use the technology that we have at our disposal to test the things that I'm learning how to do. Not every solution, not every tip, not every strategy, not every tactic that you pick up from an outside source is going to work for your target audience.
It's not?
Because there are no silver bullets and because personalities are different, right? We are human. We are complex. Individuals have preferences. So because that's true, we've got to be able to, one, consistently learn, and two, block off the time to be able to put that learning into practice and see if it works. Measure and track everything that you're doing and then lean into the things that you're seeing results from and lean away from the stuff that doesn't yield the result that you're looking for. You might find other results there. That's always interesting to find other results that you weren't expecting. Unexpected results lead to other experiments and so on and so forth. Yeah. This has been my addiction for 6 months.
Now, I'm guessing with your personality, you're not terribly detail-oriented.
I don't know how to take that. Yes, I'm pretty detail-oriented.
Are you really? Okay, because usually people that are outgoing or gregarious, they don't like a lot of details. So, but you're kind of a unique fellow.
If you are going to make decisions based on data, I hope details matter to you.
Yeah, right. Well, but usually, and again, this is a huge stereotype. So I'm thinking like a disc profile that DI is really not terribly detail oriented. My gosh.
No, I know what you mean. Guys like me are usually pretty reckless and don't think things through and aren't very detailed and let go of stuff early. Those are very stigmatic things that people like me often get labeled with.
Yeah, but you don't have that.
I don't. And I think it's because I make a conscious effort to be that statistical outlier that doesn't have that problem. I am also very good at using technology to my advantage to manage my time. Great example. I use Asana for task management, when it comes to projects and things that have deadlines. Okay. And then I use Salesforce tasks for my sales pipeline. I have Cirrus Insight that I use for task management on one side of my email, and that's how I run my sales cycle. And then on the other side of the fence, I use Asana plus time blocking on my calendar to be able to make sure I allocate enough time to get all my to-dos done. That combination of technology helps to make sure that I am being as productive as possible and handling the workload I have to workload consistently throughout the day. I am also training myself to be capturing data at every turn. No point in capturing it if I'm not going to interpret it. We have to be able to capture data so that we know what's working. We have to be able to say, now that I have the data, what does it mean? And what change can I make to be able to do it?
So were you naturally always doing that, or have you
found this is a new revelation? Yeah.
Okay. That's what I was expecting.
Yeah. This is a new revelation. And I got to tell you, it's an addiction once you get into it, because you can start three or four experiments at a time and watch things fail and win. And you're like, oh my God, like, let's just do this again and again and again, because it's working. And then you see everything moving up to the right and you're like, oh, this one is the one that works. We should stick with this one. Forget this other one. And you can let that go. It becomes less of a burden.
But, and that's my point, is I don't care your personality type. I don't care what you like or don't like. There's certain things that you need to do to be successful. And that's the point of this whole conversation, is that continuous learning is you said something, it was not a throwaway line. And I want to tease that back out again. You said, listen, the more you know about different things, the more effective you are. So talk a little bit more about that. Why is that the case?
Well, it's because everybody buys things from people in different ways for different reasons, right? People typically buy things when they're looking to improve a certain situation or solve an existing problem. If I want to get better, I'm going to look for things that get me better. But it doesn't necessarily mean the person that's selling it to me is going to be awesome. It doesn't necessarily mean that person is going to give me a great, and I'm going to use the magic phrase, customer experience. Never before has customer experience been so important. Yeah. In the past, we looked at customer experience as something that led to revenue. Today, we look at customer experience like, sure, there's a halfway point where they actually become a client, but the rest of that trip, the rest of that race looks like, did they renew? And if we can't provide a good customer experience for them so that they renew, the chances of them actually giving us money again next year are pretty fucking slim. And that's a fact of life. And anybody that's ever bought anything can attest that that is true, because you only buy it once, have a bad experience once, and then you never buy it again.
Yeah.
Versus I bought it once. It was a great experience. Not only would I buy it again, but I'm going to recommend it to 25 people.
Yeah. And if you don't like it, you're going to recommend it to 300 not to, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So yeah, I feel like this is a new revelation, and it's changing the way that I think about growth and development. But on the whole, I feel like that continuous learning piece is what's led me to this point where I now have so many apps in my belt, so many different techniques and tactics and things that I can pull out and try and use, that I'm going to keep going with that. And the things that don't work, I stop using them, or I put them on a shelf and I come back to them later when they come back into style. For those of you out there that say cold calling is dead.
Now, do you find that, through all of this knowledge that you're gaining, through all of this learning, are you finding it's easier to connect the dots or find seemingly disparate ideas and pull them together to help your customers or prospects a little bit better?
You know, I think what I'm learning is that if I try something with somebody and it doesn't go the right way, just wait a little while, come back and try it a different way. Even the people that said no to you before they'll come back to the table and have a conversation. You know, you don't have to end everything on a somber, hateful, hurtful note, right? The fact that somebody said no to you is not the same as, hey, do me a favor and never talk to me again, right? Go get hit by a car. That's not the same thing, right? Salespeople have this terrible habit. When somebody says no to them, they immediately label that person as not interested or not a prospect anymore. If you go back 3 months later after somebody said no to you and see that person's LinkedIn profile, I'm going to say comfortably that there's a 75% chance that they don't even work at that company anymore.
Yeah. Well, and it's kind of curious too, because look how much everything changes within a quarter. I mean, life is fundamentally different quarter by quarter. Yeah. And I had a mentor of mine. I don't want to call him a mentor. I had a peer of mine that he would constantly, he taught me so much. I want to give him credit. He taught me so much about cold calling engagement and all that good stuff. But whenever it came to follow-up and going back after, he's like, don't do it. It's a waste of time. And I unfortunately listened to him for too long. And whenever I stopped listening to him and I started doing systematic follow-up and reaching out, like you said, it fundamentally changed everything. Because even if you go, hey, James, you and I spoke back on blankety blank date. And you know what? I caught you at a horrible bad time. Now it's probably not any better. Just that by referencing a specific date, there's about a 300% better likelihood that they're going to engage and have a deeper dialogue with you, maybe even book the appointment that time.
I am okay with someone saying, sorry, I don't remember talking to you, but how can I help you?
Yeah.
That's a brilliant question to ask a salesperson. How can I help you? Salespeople, the answer is, well, the reason I'm reaching out to you is, and then tell them the reason that you're reaching out.
Yeah, and have one.
Have a good one, right?
Yeah, geez Louise, right?
And make sure that it's not because you want to sell them something.
Yeah, and it's not, oh, I thought there was this going in the voicemail. Oh, let me help you. So, all right, perfect.
Yeah, John always tells this story. John always tells this story about people that reach out, and they always have this like opener about the University of Maryland where he went to college, and it's always disconnected from what they say next, right? Reach out, be relevant. If you're going to do like, hey, I noticed something about you, which is very like outdone. If you're going to do that, make the thing you noticed relevant to your value proposition. You can't be like, John, I saw you went to the University of Maryland. Anyway, the reason I'm reaching out is because we have this great technology. Like, why is that relevant to the University of Maryland? Not at all relevant. Yeah. Like, what are you, trying to just say that, you know, I went to college? Yeah, so what? Like.
I was trying, man. I was trying to personalize it. Son of a.
I just wanted to personalize. Yeah, personalization and relevance are not the same thing.
Yeah, exactly. Well, son of a gun. So time's ticking down here. So I guess let me transition to this. Hopefully we beat this up enough that people realize that continuous learning has to happen, and it has to happen in multiple different areas, not just the sales tactics, but a broad band from time management to taking care of myself and health to communication and engagement, active listening, and every other aspect. So do that continuous learning. Absolutely. So whenever you're looking at people trying to make that change, what do you see the biggest drawback or challenge that people are facing in trying to get into that continuous improvement mindset?
Yeah, the mistake that leadership makes when they're trying to encourage continuous learning and development and get people invested in their own success to get them to care. The thing that they mistake is that they think they're going to achieve that goal by coaching to the numbers and not the person. One of the hardest things about being a sales leader is that you have to know what is motivating everyone at an individual level. And then you have to coach to that. You have to coach towards that situation. We talk a lot about how leadership should be focused a lot on coaching right now. The culture should be one of learning because there's always something to learn. Everybody that is an expert, even they have somebody that they look to and learn from. So the mistake they make is that they try to hold them accountable for metrics and KPIs and numbers, and they call that leadership. Leadership is, how are you liking the job? What can I do to help you win next month? That's the kind of conversation that I think people should be focused on that's going to promote continuous learning. Hey, last time we had a one-on-one, you said I could provide you with a resource that would help you to develop professionally and personally. I just got this for you. I think you will like it. Try it. That is a great way to show that you're interested in them being successful long-term instead of how many cold calls did you make today? That is not an effective strategy.
Yeah, because there you do have to do supervision, so don't mishear them. However, that supervision
holding people accountable is extremely important.
Yeah, but that's a small part of it. You're not going to have that person be accountable if you're not finding their motivation. Now, let me ask it on the opposite end. So you're that sales leader. You want to create this culture. You want to pour your life into people to help them grow and be better. Yet you find that some people just don't want to grow. They don't want to learn. They don't want to improve. Talk to that leader. What should that leader do?
Don't wait. Don't do the thing that a lot of people do where they hope somebody will grab onto it and they haven't in 6 months. Talk to them one-on-one. You know, tell them that they're lacking in the results and you need to know what you can do to help. Eventually, you're going to come to a point where they're either going to tell you what you can do to help and you're going to do it, and they're going to take that help and do something with it, or they're not. And we don't need it. You don't need to feel bad for telling somebody they're not a fit for the role anymore. That's the thing I think a lot of leaders struggle with, is they think they're some demon because they're letting somebody that's a bottom performer go. It's okay to cut someone loose because they're not a fit or because they're unhappy. You don't have to wait for that person to quit. Again, I think labor laws and stuff like it's probably differs from place to place and things like that. But on the whole, I think a lot of leaders wait too long to find out that somebody is failing at the job. And then there's like a resentment that's built up and a guilt that comes along with it. Both if you want to build an, right. If, and on both sides, if you want to build an A team and you want the people on that A team to be proud of that A team, you need people that are going to work hard to become an A player. Some people are quite gifted at knowing how capable they are of hard work, while other people believe that they shouldn't have to work this hard. It's easy to find out which one is which. All you got to do is give them enough work.
Well, and the other side of that too, to kind of add on to that, they're miserable because they want to do well. I would contend that for the most part, there might be that one crazy person that shows up just to show up, but I would contend that most people show up to do a really good job and they know whenever they're not doing well. And it's not that they're typically bad people. It's just, they're in the wrong seat, or maybe you're the wrong leader, or it's the wrong product. And the sooner that we can come to that conclusion, help them get the place where they'll thrive. Cause there's going to be a place in which they thrive. It's just clearly not at your place, which is making you both miserable.
I think some people have, and I, you know, probably making a lot of assumptions and generalizations between the two of us here, but in my experience, some people quite literally have a mindset that they're only going to work as hard as they have to. Hmm. And they're not going to work any harder than that because there's nothing in it for them. And as long as that's the mentality, you will always be standing still. You'll never reach that level of success that most people that function this way feel they're entitled to. But they don't want to work for it. They want the result. They want the success, but they're unwilling to take the steps to get it.
Yeah.
This is a human problem. Lots of people feel this way. I think it takes a traumatic event. It takes a certain scenario that makes somebody feel desperate before they realize that it's not the right way to think. Then the next thing you know, their life changes. They start taking action. They start bettering themselves. It's the reason I went back to college, got a degree, started in sales as a career. Like this is, I needed a better life. I needed a better lifestyle and I went for it and I made the change necessary up here, right here, and physically to be able to do it.
Yeah. And it, for that leader, you cannot, well, you might disagree with this, but for that leader, I'm going to contend that you cannot motivate anyone. The only thing that you can do is help that person, or to tease out, draw out of that person why they would want to change in their motivation, and get them on that path. And then if you're that person that feels like you're the victim, that you should only work as hard as is the minimal required, then the question I would ask you is, well, are you getting what you want? And how much more effort, which is probably not a whole heck of a lot, would you have to exert to become something completely of what you want? And if you don't know what you want, you're going to get exactly nothing. So I don't know if that aligns with what you're saying or not.
People are always challenged to be more.
Yeah.
No matter where they are in their journey, where they are in success, if it's not an external factor charging them with being more, it's themselves.
And that intrinsic motivation is, I think, so critical.
Only for the people that actually know how to use it. The people that are self-motivated enough to go get it. Other people need that external force, and that usually builds that resentment we mentioned earlier. Leading a team is not easy because you have to manage people, and the people hacking part is the hardest part about management leadership. Yeah. The people hacking part is the part that will always come back and bite you if it can. Yeah. Because people are scared, panicky animals on the whole. A person, I think this is Men in Black, right? A person is calm and rational and usually pretty logical, but people as a whole, we're like scared, panicky animals. Like we, so change, oh my God, no way. Like, yeah, turns out change brings progress. You didn't know that?
Well, so should so I'll adapt this. I typically ask for a best business hack for talent sales or scaling a business. So I would ask this. How do you hire for this type of person, a person that wants that continuous improvement?
Great question. Hiring is such an interesting topic right now. I feel like there's a lot of good questions that I've heard from hiring managers. One that I haven't heard that I always suggest people start asking, and I'll just give this one to you. Ask them what their plan of attack is, right? If somebody's sitting across from you saying, I want to be an SDR, doesn't it make sense that you would be like, if I hired you, how would you attack a list of accounts I gave you? You need a plan there. What's the plan? I'm not looking for, I don't know, I'd call them, right? Like yeah, insecure response here, right? Like I'm looking for something like, well, I would look at the accounts on LinkedIn and decide where they fall in priority. And then I would look at the personas within those accounts and probably come up with some messaging to match those personas so that I could schedule calls and get to know those people. That's a good first step. What a great answer. I'm hiring that guy. Yeah. Or that girl, right? Like they've got a plan.
And for you that might be looking for a job or that are interviewing, it's being able to give a precise answer with, and whenever I say precise, I'm not talking verbose, like just 30,000 words. It's clear, concise, with action steps of what you're going to do in a story behind it. And if you can't do that, you're likely going to make stuff up and we're going to call you out on it.
Well, not only that, but if you're on the market for a new job and you are doing the traditional thing of going to websites and filling out applications, and then that's it, you're hoping to get a phone call back, you're doing it wrong. Go online and create videos and tell people what you want out of the next sales job that you take, and find out the people that jump into the comment section and say, I'm hiring, fill out an application, let's talk.
Yeah.
That is the modern job seeker today in the sales space, is they are putting themselves out there saying, what's up, everybody? I'm looking for my next sales role, and this is what I want to sell. I do this and I do that, and I'm really good about this. Let me know if you're hiring. I really look forward to it. Hashtag hire James. These people are getting job offers in mails and DMs and emails from people that are saying, saw your video. I have 8 sales roles open. I'm watching this happen right now. So if you're out there on the job market, take that step, do that thing. You're going to find that more people reach out to you and want you to come work for them.
Yeah, it always drives me crazy that salespeople won't prospect for a new sales gig or do the things.
No, right? Prospect your way into the job, right?
Yeah,
that makes total sense. How many people do this? So few.
Never, ever, ever. So cool. All right. So hey, what resources, books, podcasts might you recommend that we can be as good as you?
So first of all, you got to read Gap Selling by Keenan. That's a good, it's not a prospecting book, but it's a great book for closers and for discovery and like genuine curiosity, right? Like Keenan did a great job with that one. I'm a big fan of Fanatical Prospecting by Jeb Blunt. That changed my life. I use the practices in that book. Also, you want to get John's children's book, I Want to Be in Sales When I Grow Up. That is a fantastic children's book that he wrote with his daughter, Charlotte. Fantastic. And then as far as podcast goes, Make It Happen Mondays is our podcast, and I'm very proud of it. It's one that John's been doing for years. His curiosity level is what sparks that one, and it's pretty good. So I would listen to that. Also, Brian Burns does the Brutal Truth About Sales. That's a great podcast. And then The Other Side of Sales with Ashley Early, also a good podcast. I think Casey Jones still might co-host that one as well. As far as guides go, there are tons of great resources and guides from our partners like Gong, Proposify, Vidyard, Salesloft. You can go to any of those websites and find the guides that they give out. And that stuff right there will definitely highlight a lot of things that maybe will open your eyes to what's working in the modern selling environment today.
Yeah. And so he just laid out a whole litany of places, didn't even look off a list because he's going to these places. So get it, know it, make it your own kind of thing. All right. Now, what do you see coming down the pike, James? What future is coming out? Like, oh my gosh, run away, or, oh, this is going to be great.
Yeah, so I see continuous learning being something that individual contributors pay for themselves. That's the future of salespeople right now, in my view. So if you go, you'll see it, right? Because if you go to joinjbsales.com, you'll see our membership. We are almost 4,000 strong at this point. And it's not been live for very long. We got a Slack channel there that people get access to, live bi-weekly Ask Me Anything sessions. And we're not getting money from teams, from companies. We're getting money from the people themselves, from the sellers themselves. They're opting in and saying, I want to be the best seller at this company, and I need someone to show me how to do it technically, yeah, tactically, professionally, right? In like a repeatable way. And those people are the people I admire, because you're actually spending your own money to go get the resources you need to be successful. You guys have my heart. So joinjbsales.com. You can check out the future of sales right there.
Nice. All right. Well, hey, I think you just hit it, but we'll be a little bit more specific in the question. James, who should reach out to you? How should they do it? And why should people reach out to you?
Reach out to me anytime you want to have a conversation about how to grow professionally or personally as a seller. Reach out to me if you're looking for what sales can do for you as a chosen career path. Reach out to me if you're a young seller struggling to hit quota and you don't want to get fired tomorrow. Reach out to me if you want to have a conversation about overcoming adversity and being able to be successful despite what's put in front of you. And you can do that on Instagram or Twitter. I am at Say What Sales. You can also send me an email, james@jbarrows.com, or you can cold call me like a human. And that is at 305-632-6005. I've never met a stranger in my life.
And he truly hasn't. James, as always, you're awesome, man. I love you. Appreciate it. And take the advice here, gang, please. Notice all the application and how this just comes off of the tongue here, because he's living this. He's trying things out and experimenting. So that's what we need to do in order to order to win. And James, fair to say, you've probably fallen down a couple of times. And
lots of times. I got scars that would blow people's minds. But, you know, we fall so we can get back up. That's what they said. Is that Batman? I think that was a Batman movie. Was it Alfred that said that? I can't remember.
Who knows? We'll take it, Alfred. That was you. That was James. Say what? All right. So, hey, everyone. I appreciate it. Get after it. Have a great one. Thanks, everyone.